Welcome, Dog Moms and Dads, to our show where we discuss the everyday joys and challenges of pet parenting. I'm your host, Jen.
And I'm Ashley.
And this is a Dog Mom podcast presented by Zipping Paws.
I almost wore my Zippy Paws jacket today. It's sitting right next to me.
Oh, maybe we should wear it next time.
We should. It'll be appropriate. All right. I'm excited for today's episode, all about food. And I love food. Not dog food. I love people food. But my dogs love dog food.
I mean, I feel like our dogs love their food and our food too, right?
Yeah.
They don't care.
Oh, oh yeah. I feel like my dogs eat better than I do too, but that's probably a completely different discussion.
I know. I shared something on Instagram a while ago about like how I open up my fridge and all of my meal prep is for my dogs. And then for me, I'm like, oh, I have nothing to eat. Might as well just like order DoorDash or something.
Yep. We just recently bought a separate freezer for our garage to store dog food and supplies. I mean, we'll get into that later, but it's out of control.
Yeah, I think today we're going to talk a little bit about in depth about what we feed our dogs and what we've fed our dogs in the past, and then kind of like our experience with picking dog food and how our dogs react to the food and what we want to do kind of in the future. And then we have a very special guest, Jim from Guardian Pet Foods. He's going to come on and talk about his experience, I think, over 25 years in the pet industry. And now he started his own brand called Noble Dog Bars. And then he's going to give us a little bit insight on that side of the pet industry. I mean, we're all in the pet industry, but I feel like we're so removed from like the pet food section, right? We don't really know anybody in there. So it's really eye-opening to have Jim come on and talk about all that stuff. So that's going to be in like 15 minutes.
Hopefully we can keep chatting down.
Blab on forever and ever. So do you want to start with what you feed Bjorn and Tova?
Yeah, so we've had not a long journey, but it's been an involved journey with Bjorn's food. When we got Bjorn, I knew that what we fed him was going to be a big deal. When we had been putting Stella through chemo, her oncologist also had a secondary degree in veterinary nutrition, and he was of a firm belief that a lot of the things that are in kibble are not necessarily the healthiest thing for dogs. He was very careful in not saying which kibble. I don't want our listeners to go out and, you know, throw all of their food away, but he helped me understand that you have to be really picky about what you're feeding your dog. You have to think about what you're giving them. So as a neurotic pet parent, I had it in me that, okay, my next dog is not going to eat kibble ever. And that lasted for about 5 minutes when we got Bjorn. It's not feasible. It's not something that you just inherently know either, right? Especially as a puppy, coming from the situation that he was in, we brought him home. He had to continue being fed what he was being fed. And we had this great idea to transition him to raw. And for those of you listening at home and not watching this on YouTube, there are some massive eye rolls going on.
The Ashley that was special.
The Ashley special. That was not a smart decision. We had talked to our vet about it. They had given us the okay with the understanding that we needed to watch him, and it was too rough on his stomach. It was not a fun time. And then you've got the underlying fact that we're both vegetarian, so we don't eat meat. We don't handle raw meat, and trying to feed our dog raw meat was absolutely disgusting. Don't get me wrong, they can digest it. It upset Bjorn's stomach for a little bit. And it was a gradual transition, but it's very, very expensive. It's hard to keep up with. And he had gone back to kibble for a little bit, but it was wrecking his stomach. It was just not good for him. And we started doing like half fresh, half kibble, which he did really, really well on. I think that's what you were doing for Birdie and Kramer for a little bit too, or if you're not still doing that. And quarantine happened and we got really, really ambitious and started feeding them completely fresh food. So cooked raw, essentially. We would buy all of the ingredients. That's why we have the secondary freezer in our garage right now. We would buy chicken, we would buy a little bit of veggie, we would buy a grain. We had supplements that we included. I'll kind of touch briefly on what he's getting because that's what Tova's eating as well. But I want to be really clear for the listeners that are interested in doing this, that it's something that you have to go through your vet for. I'm not going to give out specific percentages because I don't want that to get transcended into your dog that might have different dietary needs. It might have different food allergies. But Bjorn was on a percentage split where it was majority protein. So he would either have lean ground turkey, we would do chicken breast, or really, really lean ground beef. We found that when we fed him ground beef with a high fat content, it was really messing up his stomach as well.
I agree. Yeah.
He loved how it tasted, but it wasn't fun on the other end. And we would mix the protein with a very, very, very little bit of carbohydrate. For Bjorn, it was either brown rice or quinoa. And then we added certain vegetables. Some vegetables are higher in sugars than others, and that's not good for dogs. Both Tova and Bjorn really liked spinach. So we would add in spinach for a lot of that, sometimes kale. We do get a produce delivery box, so if there were extra veggies that we were worried were going to go bad, we just throw those in there. And the one thing that you have to keep in mind when you're feeding either raw, well, not so much raw because you're just giving them the hunks of meat, but when you're feeding fresh, is they're not getting that crunch and that bone. So you have to make sure they're getting calcium as well. So we would grind up eggshells to this essentially a powder and put that on top. We had different vitamin supplements that he was getting or that he is getting, as well as fish oil. And then they also get marrow bones to keep their teeth in good condition. So it's an ordeal. I have noticed almost immediately their trips to the bathroom were less frequent. They were much, much smaller. They seem healthier. Their coats look great, but it's an ordeal. It is. It's a weekly thing. We do it. Sometimes we do it every 2 weeks, but that's getting hard. We try to cook every week and they have meals, but it's been great for them, but I don't know if it's necessarily something that is sustainable if you're not working from home or sustainable if you're not, you know, obviously working for a pet company. I feel like I could prepare their meals even in the office, but that's not something that everyone necessarily has the capability of doing.
Yeah. I mean, you go above and beyond. So, I mean, I feed my dog kibble. Okay. I think we talk about, making food for them, and I've made food for them too, mostly fresh. I don't give them raw. It's just not something that I'm necessarily interested in. Just don't really like raw meat. I mean,
it's gross.
It is kind of gross.
It's gross.
And I just don't really want to try. I know people have said that it's worked really well on their dogs, so maybe that's something that, like, if I'm at the end of the rope, I'll try it. But personally, it's not necessarily for me. And my dogs have always eaten kibble, and it's so convenient that,
yeah,
that's just like what I do. And I think that's a lot of what dog owners do, because it's what you see as dog food, right? When you think of dog food, you think of like little bread croutons that you buy from the grocery store. So I think for beginners who are just getting into learning about dog food and trying to pick which dog food is best for you, I think we can definitely help them to like pick the better kibble, because, you know, not all of us are like amazing fresh food cooks like you. So we just have or to make stupid little steps, right?
Stupid. I don't know if I would say amazing at this point. I am over it. If I can find a better alternative, it's going to be a one and done situation, because it's a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's something that is a supplement, right? Like, I would give them kibble and I would put like store-bought freeze-dried patties from a pet store, and I'll, you know, crumple it up and put it on top. Or I will cook fresh food like lean ground turkey or lean ground beef. Like you said, I try to go as like a little fat percentage as possible. when we're coming over with this rape.
he hears you talking about food.
Yeah, he's like, food? What was I saying? Oh, yes, lean. Because I've found that every time I've given them, like, some of the cheaper stuff with, like, 12% fat or something, it, their stomach gets a little wonky. So I try to stick with the leanest possible. But those tend to be more expensive. So, obviously, there's a trade-off. They love, like, the ground sirloin steak. I'm like, wow, I don't even eat this myself. But I'll buy it for you guys.
We used to feed Bjorn before we went fully vegetarian. We were pescatarian for the longest time, and whenever we would cook salmon, we would like double fry the skin, and they would get that, and Bjorn would get that as treats too. So he's always been spoiled. Even when he was on just kibble, he's always gotten the little extra bumps.
Yeah, definitely. We do that with our dogs too. Like, Cranemer loves noodles. So when we make pasta or something, we'll keep a little bit of like the plain pasta and not put sauce on it. And that's, you know, his portion. So
I love it.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I feel like the pet industry, like the pet food industry, is so big. There's so many different types of food. We have dry kibble, and then we have subscription services that I always see, you know, commercials about, where it's like fresh, human grade. What does human grade actually even mean for dog food, right? And then there's
that's another rabbit hole.
Right? And then there's freeze-dry, and then there's freeze-dried raw, and then there's raw diets that you can buy in store. It's so much. Like, my mind is like, it's jumbled. Like, how does anybody start to kind of like navigate through that, right? And I think I don't necessarily have the answers, but I think one thing that we need to look at is definitely the ingredient list, right? So we always want to look for beef or meat materials, right? Nothing that's like, if it's chicken meal or chicken byproduct, that means it's not whole chicken, not chicken breast or chicken meat. It's kind of like the bits and pieces, and then they grind it up. So you're looking for food that the first, second, and third ingredients should be real meat. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that I also learned is that if an ingredient and the second ingredient and the third ingredient are placed that way, it doesn't necessarily mean that the first ingredient is more percentage than the second. And it could mean that they're the same, you know, and then it's up to the manufacturers to choose which one they want to put first, which, you know, as a manufacturer, you obviously want to put the better sounding product first. So, I mean, we always say, like, you have to look at ingredients, but then you also have to take it with a grain of salt, because it doesn't always necessarily mean what you assume it to mean, right?
Yeah. And I would say another thing that I learned during our food escapades is understanding too how much you're feeding your dog. I know a lot of times the price tag can be a deterrent for a lot of people. You're looking at, you know, a higher quality kibble and you're saying, shoot, I can't afford that, that's so expensive. But always look at the serving sizes, right? Because a lot of times a higher grade kibble is going to be much higher in protein, so you're not going to need to feed your dog as much, right? So it will, that same bag of kibble that is, you know, double the cost of what you're currently buying, it's still going to be a little bit more expensive on average, but it's not probably going to be as expensive as you're thinking, because the lower grade kibbles you have to feed a lot of, because there's tons of filler. And for, especially for people that are shopping for their food at any pet stores, so PetSmart, Petco, any place with an actual veterinarian office inside, ask the receptionist. They're always extraordinarily helpful. If you don't understand something, they're hard for people in the pet industry to understand. I have no idea what I'm looking at half the time. Nico is constantly on his phone whenever we're buying anything for the babies, just because there's so many different rules, regulations, different dietary needs that don't be afraid to ask. Don't be embarrassed to ask. And I would always recommend, no matter what, if you're feeding raw, if you're feeding fresh, if you're feeding kibble, if you're feeding freeze dried, talk to your actual veterinarian that knows your dog, knows what they need, knows their history. There are dogs with allergies too. And it's always good to have that open dialogue with someone who, one, is an expert. Two, if they're not quite at expert level, they have the network. I can guarantee you every veterinarian has a veterinary nutritionist either in the office or on speed dial that can answer those questions for you too.
Yeah, I think I need to do that. I need to take your advice because Brittany has so many issues with food and I can't find something that she is like 100% okay on, like the food that she's on currently or previously. It was chicken, so I think that she has issues with chicken because sometimes when we do fresh food and we cook her chicken breast or turkey or something, she does get itchy and she shakes her head and she does this thing called eating her ice cream, which is like she'll take her back feet and then just gnaw on it like, yeah, you know, she's eating an ice cream cone. But once we stop feeding her chicken, it seems to be doing a little bit better, but it's not.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's not 100%. So it's just, I've like racked my brain. I don't want to really put her on any medication or anything. So
she's just like me. She's got all those gold teeth in the back of her mouth. Doesn't like chicken.
Oh, yeah. So update on her teeth situation. She got a crown put on her teeth and it's like, it looks like liquid metal. It looks pretty badass, but it's in the back, so she can't really show it too much. I wish she had it like in the front when she's like, when she's grinning, she can show it.
Total tangent. I just saw a tiger that had that done on his big fang cracked. I'll have to find a picture. We can share it on our Instagram stories because it was wild. It was literally a giant gold tiger tooth.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then it made me think of bird. I was like, oh.
Hers is in the back. But yeah, so people do recommend marrow bones or, you know, hard bones that they can use to clean their teeth or add to their calcium. But I can't give Birdie that because she cracked her tooth on, I don't even know what she cracked her tooth on. It's probably a pine cone or something. So poor I think thing. She's pretty, her teeth are pretty brittle for some reason. So I just don't want to spend another $4,000.
Yeah, right.
So she's not getting any bones.
That's such a bummer because Bjorn and Tova, that's their favorite treat. I've really scaled back on the treats that I give them, especially with Tova. Bjorn is a garbage disposal with anything treat related. Tova, I'm pretty certain, is allergic to milk bones. Milk bones just wreck her stomach, which breaks my heart because Bjorn loves them. So I've started just dehydrating fruits and veggies in my oven to give when they like deserve an extra special treat. But they love the marrow bones. And for those of you who can feed your dog bones, you can get them at any local butcher. A lot of times they sell them in packages. They're frozen. And they still have some of that marrow inside too. But you can also ask my butcher. A lot of times I'll walk up and I'll say, hey, like, do you have any extra bones that you don't want that you need to get rid of? And they sell them to you for super, super cheap, which is good.
I'm like, who are you? You have your own butcher? I mean, I just go to
the butcher at the grocery store. I don't have my own. I don't eat
meat. It sounded like you had a butcher that you have on speed dial and you can just like text them and be like, hey.
What do you think I am?
Hey, you guys got any of those bones I got last time?
You got any bones for me? Okay, I'm done. We digress. I think it's probably time to bring our guest on, right? Mm-hmm. You ready?
I think so. Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so today we have a very special guest with us, Jim, CEO and president of Guardian Pet Foods. Welcome, Jim, to our show.
Yes, welcome.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jim, and your company.
Sure. I've been in the pet care industry for just about 25 years now. I actually started when I was five. I was an intern in college for the Ralston Purina company. And then from there, I worked for Purina, worked for Mars as part of the Royal Canin group, Blue Buffalo. And then I've done a lot of consulting work for a bunch of smaller companies and some big distributors as well as manufacturers. 2017, I decided to go out on my own. Second time at a business. The first one was in graphic arts and design, and did that for about 4 years, and then came back into pet. Partnered up with my current co-founder, Dr. Ryan Yamka, and we started Guardian. We founded it in October of 2017. Basic premise was we had seen enough companies and done enough things that we knew we could do better for our pets. So that was our basic premise, was to start with pets first and make a better pet food, make it more easy, convenient, and help out pet parents wherever we could.
Yeah, that's exciting because we met because one of your team members reached out to me on social media and said, you know, like, try out, you know, the Noble dog bars. And I was like, sure, send some over. I'm going to go on a trip soon. And I just wanted to test it out. And my dog loves it. Like, one of them, Kramer, he's very nervous on a trip, so he wouldn't really take any new food. But my other one, the little one, Birdie, she is like, you can see it in her eyes. You know, her eyes get all wide, and then her butt is like independent of her body. Like, it shakes so much when she sees me like pull out a Noble bar. So she is definitely your biggest fan.
The little one.
The little one. The misbehaving one.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, that's what we like to hear. It doesn't matter what the food is. I mean, as good as the food you can make, if the dog isn't excited to eat it and won't eat it,
right?
Doesn't matter. So always good to hear that we get the wiggles from a dog.
Yeah, you get the whole butt wiggles.
No, I was just going to say, Jody was the one who reached out to you. I am somewhat awful at social media. I'm supposed to be looking through things and finding things for work, and then I tend to get hooked and go off in other directions and spend hours looking at dumb things. So
yes.
Jody was the
guilty
one. Yeah, she was the one to be able to bring it back on, you know, on task and reach out to you, and I'm glad she did. So
yeah, she's great. I like chatting with her, and she told me about how her dog is doing on the Noble food dog bars, and it's just a great story.
Yeah, she was in a panic. She called me today. Her food arrives on Friday. She was like, I'm gonna run out tomorrow morning. What do I do for that one extra meal?
Oh no, we are gonna have to feed them kibble. Like,
she was like, what do I do? And I was like, well, you can, you know, look for this or that and start throwing out some ideas. And she was just like, I think he's just gonna have to wait till Friday.
He's just going to have to starve. We're going to have to ration his food.
I love it. Well, I'm excited about this just because we're, Jen and I both are very picky with what our dogs eat. And I know that we've both had a few trials and tribulations this COVID quarantine time that kind of changed the way we looked at dog food. So I think this will be really informative for me, at least. I'm looking forward to peppering you with questions.
Yeah, I've prepared a lot of questions, which I've sent over already, so we can get as in-depth as we can with our 1 hour time limit here. But I really think that this is going to be helpful to us and our listeners, because the dog food industry, if you want to do a little bit of research or like what type of food is best for my dog and like what should I be feeding my dog and what should I be avoiding, there's so much information and I don't know which information to trust, you know, so it just seems very daunting, even for me. So I think for a lot of first-time pet parents, like, it's just overwhelming. So it'd be helpful for you to help kind of like help us wade through all that information and know what to look out for.
The industry does not make it easy ask a question and get an answer. There's all these little caveats and puffery claims that they can get away with and different things like that. Mm-hmm. So usually when I do this, I say this next part to people and they're all kind of shocked at it, but like CBD, for example, is illegal in pet food. It's illegal to give CBD to your pets according to federal regulations and laws. But you would never tell because it's almost a $1 billion industry today across the country. And
I don't even want to ask why that is. I don't know if I want to know.
Well, it's just because there's no proof behind it. Like, everybody has anecdotal information. I tell people I have a CBD cream that I use for my hands because I, you know, they're like pretty arthritic. So the CBD cream helps if it gets really bad. But that's about all they go on. You know, there's nothing. They don't specifically say, well, for Jim, I know that it's 20 milligrams that's helping his hands or anything like that. And they don't know any of that for pet food. So the regulatory agencies, the only thing that they've gone after as far as CBD companies is if they make an outlandish medical claim, like this prevents cancer, cures cancer, does, you know, stops this. They can't make any medical claims. If they do, they'll stop them. They'll put a stop sale on them. The other one that they've done recently, I think about 2 months ago, they shut down 25 companies because they tested their product. And if it said that it had 25 milligrams of CBD, they tested it. And if it had basically under 22 or over 27, they pulled it off the shelf because the packaging is supposed to say what's actually in it.
Yeah, right.
And the bigger concern is because there's so many different ways that CBD is given to a dog. It's in a treat, it could be sprinkled over top, it could be a tincture, it could be a drop of oil on the food or whatever. They all absorb differently. And there's no studies long-term to show what it's actually done to the dog and how much gets absorbed, how much is retained mm-hmm. in the body. Like, we have some of that information on the human side, but dogs are not humans. They're not furry little humans.
Yeah.
So last year there was a federal, a congressional hearing, and all these CBD company executives came in, and not one of them brought actual scientific data and research. They just brought anecdotal things and said that they were good.
Yeah. Like, my cousin's friend's husband took this and it was great.
And he gave it to his dog and the dog suddenly was running.
Right. Exactly. So I think the more the story is we need more research. We need more, you know, we just need more data and information.
Yeah. And that's the reason I start with the CBD part is, one, most people don't know it's technically illegal. It's going across state lines is even worse if you're moving and selling CBD products in pet food. Mm-hmm. But the need for the regulations and more data carries over to the rest of pet food. Mm-hmm. So when you look at pet food and you're talking about the ingredients and, you know, nutrition and what to look for and what to believe and whatnot, it's, you know, it gets crazy. Champion Pet Food, based out of Canada, they have Origin and Akana, their two brand lines. They use a statement that says biologically appropriate. So that's what they say, all their food is biologically appropriate, and they get into a whole bunch of stuff about that. Well, there is a class action lawsuit against them that is in court. I think there might've just been a ruling that came out or something. But basically the people were saying, prove to us that it's biologically appropriate.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you're saying that, so we think it's good for them, but prove mm-hmm. it. You haven't given us any proof at all. And Champion's attorney in court on the record said, we can't be held responsible or liable for the term biologically appropriate because it's marketing puffery.
Lovely.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, you say something like that, but yet it's been on all their advertising. It's the backbone of their company that they make biologically appropriate food. But yet right. In court, when push came to shove, they said, no, it's just marketing puffery. We can't be responsible.
I mean, it could very well be a great food for dogs, but you yeah. know, with these claims, you have to have the data, the numbers to back it up, right?
Yeah.
So.
And there's other companies that take distant studies that they try to apply to their own food and say, you know, this is good. There's a couple of fresh food companies that have said things. 2 years ago, there was one that said, you know, if you feed your dog our diet, they'll live 32 months longer.
That just seems so irresponsible.
It is, especially considering when they made that claim, the company hadn't even been around for 32 months. So... You know, it's like, in order to do that, you have to run a 14-year study on mm-hmm. litter mates, and you have to test and see all that stuff. And it's just like, you can't make those claims, but They do, because in that case, it would fall to the FTC to follow up on the regulatory part, the Federal Trade Communications, and they don't. Like, they've got other things to do. So they just let it go. And if you're a manufacturer, you could bring it to the industry watchdog, but you have to pay, I think it's $30,000 to bring up a complaint against another manufacturer. So you know, that's the sort of stuff that just confuses it all, when it really should be much simpler than that. You know, we have a dog or a cat. They have certain nutritional requirements, biological functions. How do I feed them? What do they need? And how do I make sure they get that? Like, that's as simple as it can be. Like, there's a lot of science behind that, but you don't need to hide behind all the marketing puffery.
Right, definitely. Yeah, I think this is something that we try to do with our toys too. Like, I don't make any outlandish claims. I don't claim that they're indestructible or they're super durable or they last X amount of time. Obviously, it depends on each dog. And like with food too, you know, each dog is different. So you can't really be making all these outlandish generalizing claims without any evidence or any data to show. And I don't really appreciate that either. So that's something that I try to avoid in, you know, the pet toy industry as well.
Yeah. And I think from a marketing standpoint, we have toys that are specifically geared towards a certain type of dog. That was their intention, but it's never marketed as these are indestructible, these are going to be perfect for your puppy, because to Jen's point, every dog is different.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you say that up front so people know. I mean, you've reframed the expectation. It's not like going to some of these companies that, you know, I'll send you the indestructible toy box. And, you know, I did that. My golden retriever went through two of the toys in about 3 hours. It's like, you know, and then they're like, well, it's not really indestructible.
Right. We say that, but it's not really.
Yeah. So to carry it over to food, the same sort of thing happens with food. You've got everything from some of the designer, like the little Havapoo or the Yorkie, and you go all the way up to an Irish Wolfhound and a, you know, Bernese Mountain Dog. And so you've got a huge span of it. You can't believe that one food is the best for all of them. Like, so I tell that to people. They're like, so you're going to tell me that yours is the best food out there? Like, for some dogs it is, but for others it's not.
Yeah.
And they kind of just look at me like, God, you're awful at sales. It's like, well, I try to be good at truth telling, and that's that's the matter of it. But furthermore, when you even if you have the same breed, just like people, dogs have different metabolic rates. So, you know, I'm sure you guys have friends that, you know, you can eat a ton of food and not put on an ounce. And then you get someone else who looks at a candy bar and all of a sudden they like balloon up. You know, it's just like same thing happens with the dog. My two, for example, different breeds, the Springer Spaniel's 45 pounds. So on my food, he should eat just under 2 bars a day. The Golden Retriever is 75 pounds. He should eat 3 bars a day. The Golden Retriever eats 3 and the Springer Spaniel eats 4. Just because, I mean, I think he loses weight just sitting there. Talk about the wiggles. Like, he's such a high stress, anxiety ridden dog.
He's just burning calories all day, constantly.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's, you know, so there's different pieces there, you know, that come into play. And then furthermore, with the food, you have to, the one thing that no food company, or I shouldn't say no, I got to get away from those statements. Very few companies will ever provide you is their digestibility. So the ingredient panel that you see on the bag, that is probably the most useless data piece of information that has ever been published. So, you know, it has crude protein, crude fat, moisture, and I forget what else is, it's like
carbs, I think.
I'm sorry?
Maybe carbs?
No, they don't have to report carbs.
Protein, fat, something else, yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally drawing a blank on this one because I was going to, you know, rip on them. the crude protein, the reason it's called crude protein is that's how they measure, that's the test. So it actually doesn't measure protein, it measures nitrogen in the food. The fat it doesn't measure all the fat. It's, you know, it says crude fat, but it doesn't actually measure what kind of fat is in there, because not all fat is the same. And then, you know, moisture content, yeah, that's obviously there. But to go back to the crude protein, if you remember in 2007, there was the melamine recalls that happened in the pet industry. What had happened was Chinese ingredients were using wheat germ, basically laced with melamine. And the reason they did that is when it went into the ingredients and they went to go do their test, the crude protein shot through the roof, because melamine is a high source of nitrogen. So people were like, oh, this is great. You know, we're getting really high protein for a low cost.
Yeah.
We did it, but melamine poisoning killed dogs, thousands of them.
Oh, wow.
And it was spread across the industry at all sorts of places. And you would have thought that in 2007, when all those dogs were killed, that they would have come up with a better way of measuring it, which they can, but they don't. So, you know, when you look at a protein, you need to find out it's made of two components. There's essential amino acids and non-essential amino acids. So a dog has 10 essential amino acids that they need, that their body can't make them. So they have to get it from external, from food. All the other amino acids they can make from their body, from the food, from the other amino, from the essentials. So if they ran it that way, you would see a totally different set of numbers. There's another freeze-dried company that puts 44% crude protein on their label. So it sounds great. Mm-hmm. But when you look at what the breakout is of essential amino acids to non-essential, the essential amino acids only make up 17 of that 44. So 27 of the 44 is non-essential. And what that means is, one, the dog doesn't need it. The excess is, you know, goes out in urine and fecal matter. It's not necessary, thus non-essential. So when you think you're paying for 44% protein, you're actually only getting 17 on that. So like those are some of the games that are played,
right,
in pet food labeling and things like that.
Well, and I think to the digestibility point, I saw that firsthand. Bjorn, we had started trying to transition him to a fully raw diet. We didn't get that far, but it was a combo of raw and like a freeze-dried brand. And he was just having stomach problems after stomach problems. So we pulled any raw, because we're like, okay, we had worked with our vet. And he was just on the freeze-dried stuff. And I remember we had an issue with the brand and found a piece of wood, like a wood chunk about this big inside of his box of food. Oh yes, I've never gone Karen on a company faster in my life. But we were like, okay, you know what, that's it. And we went to Costco, we got some fresh turkey, we got some oatmeal, we got some spinach, and we made him fresh from home. We did all of our research, we supplemented bone broth, we added in ground up eggshells for calcium, some fish oil, a multivitamin, like the works. We tried to get as scientific as possible. And initially we thought we had done something wrong, because he pooped like half the amount almost instantly. It was healthy. It was once a day. And called our vet, and our vet goes, well, no, that's just because you're not feeding him stuff that he doesn't need. So we saw that firsthand, and it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. One of the examples that I give to people is, if you think of, there's two ways to first of all, satiate a dog. One, which is the easiest way, is gut fill. So, you know, dogs through their history, they can distend their stomach about two times its size. And they did that because they're scavengers. They were a feast or famine. You know, it's like, oh, there's a kill. Let's eat as much as we can, because we don't know when we're going to get it again. Until they started hanging around the campfires. Mm-hmm. So that still goes through today. They still have that physical ability. So I liken it to us with McDonald's. I can go to McDonald's, I can eat a good old happy meal and be really content. But then a half hour later, I'm starting to feel a little sick. And then an hour later, I'm hungry. And it's just because it filled my gut. So I was satisfied at the moment, but it didn't fill the second way to do it, which is for dogs, hitting the 10 essential amino acids. So if you think of the 10 as beakers, The dog eats the food, or any animal, mammal eats food, and it breaks down, and the essential amino acids are broken down and deposited into those 10 vials. And the dog will eat, or at least be hungry, until all of them hit their capacity, or what they're supposed to, their minimum requirements. The last one to be filled is called the limiting amino acid. So what ends up happening is, I'm sure if you've had dogs long enough, sometimes if you have a cat, they might go sniffing around the cat litter box. They might find something in the yard that died. They might roll around in it. They might go scavenging through garbage. There's a train of thought that believes that dogs have a superior nose and can smell these things out. So they actually go and seek out things that contain what they need to satisfy their requirements. So that's why they're digging around the litter box and the garbage and outside. And what ends up happening then is the dog hits those amino acid requirements, essential amino acid requirements, and they're satiated. And it stays, and it takes a while for those to get processed through and go out throughout the body and do what they can. So that's why they're leveled off. It's not like an hour or two later, they go, man, I'm hungry again, and they start digging.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do if you don't, you know, that metabolic rate that we talked about. So that's an important thing to understand. And when you look at it, I pick on some of the other freeze-dried companies. Some of them, if you look at their ingredients, they have a lot of artificial synthetics and different things like that. And then the telltale sign to me is when they say, add a quarter cup of water for every couple of nuggets, medallions, whatever, of warm water, and wait 5 minutes. And the reason they do that is they're rehydrating the food, the food's expanding, and it's going to fill their stomach up before it meets the essential amino acid requirement.
Feeling personally attacked right now.
Yeah, it becomes a bad cycle, and that's why almost 60% of dogs in America are considered obese, because they're eating stuff like that. And when you break it down further about digestibility, the average kibble is about 75% digestible. So if you think about it, for every 10 pounds you're feeding your dog of food, 2.5 are going straight into the backyard without any benefit to the dog at all.
That's insane.
So we do it's an interesting chart, but we show one. If you had two 25-pound dogs, one was fed like the leading natural brand, and the other one was fed ours. Over the course of the year, the dog on ours will put out about 4 pounds of fecal matter. The other dog on the leading natural will put out almost 42 pounds.
Wow. That's pounds per year?
Yeah. And no one believes us when we first tell them that. But then we're like, feed your dog at least 4 days, only our food. And think about what it looked like the first day when they went to the bathroom. Because it takes about 3 days for all the food to come through the gut and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes on the third day, but definitely by the fourth day, you will see either and or both a reduction in volume and a reduction in frequency. Because they're, you know, our bars are 93% digestible.
I need to try these.
I feel like my puppy, she used to poop like 4 pounds a day. When she was little. I'm like, how does this come out of you?
Yeah, no, I remember having dogs on other diets, and it was just like, sat there and you're like, man, you guys are like little Play-Doh factories. What are you doing?
Right.
Right.
It's like swirl of chocolate ice cream, like, you know, 3-4 times a day.
When I hate to carry on the conversation too, but I've noticed that it smells better. Not that it necessarily smells enjoyable, but it's not so pungent. Which also was eye-opening for me. And I still don't think we've mastered what our pups need to eat. But they seem healthy for the most part. And yeah, like their fecal matter is much more pleasant to pick up. There were some times that it would just clear a room.
It's not like you've sprinkled poo-pourri on there, you know, like those little things. But at the same time, it goes into, when you look at the levels of the non-essential amino acids and it sitting there and fermenting, and there's all sorts of issues. I can't speak incredibly intelligently to that. I can't even speak moderately intelligently to that. But my co-founder, Ryan, really gets in, like he can tell you specifically which amino acids are causing the smell, which ones are, you know, breaking it out. And the problem that we have, and one of the reasons we started Guardian was, one, we always say pets before profits. So, you know, you got to do what's right and start with what's right for the pet first. Two, we believe in complete transparency. So I don't know if you can see, but we have these little sheets that it's posted on our website. It shows you things that no other company will. We show our digestibility, not, you know, most companies, if they show digestibility, then the reason you have to ask, they'll often show you fat digestibility, which should be in the 90s. Fat is the primary ingredient or primary macronutrient for energy. It should be highly digestible. If you're using a poorly digestible fat, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah.
So you have to ask them, can I see your fat digestibility, energy, protein, and total digestibility? So we show all four of those on every one of our formulas. We also show where the kcals, so the units of energy that go through, we show that by macronutrient. So by protein, by carbohydrate, by fat. No other company will do that. We actually kind of got scolded by the regulatory saying, that's not a requirement. You shouldn't put that on your packaging. And we said, well, every veterinarian asks for that.
Yeah.
Because depending on what you're trying to do with your dog, you want to feed them more calories from one of those three macronutrients. You know, immediate energy needs and things like that is fat. If you need to rebuild, replenish, repair muscles and things, you want more protein. Carbohydrates are just an inexpensive kcal that can convert to fat. I mean, it's okay to have them. It's not a problem, but we only have 11% of our kcal comes from carbohydrates. The lowest kibble, I think, is Nulo, and I think they're at 35%, and the average kibble has about 60%. Wow. And it's got a lot of starches in it because it's required to make the kibble. So,
right. It has the form of shape, right?
Yeah. And that's how it's made. It's runs through the extruder and then it puffs out and it needs the starch and the carbohydrates to hold everything together in that kibble form. So, you know, we put all that in there. We've got all the amino acids. I mean, vitamins, minerals, we even include starches, sugars, fiber, insoluble and all that stuff. And it's, you should know what you're feeding. I mean, you don't have to have a degree in nutrition, animal nutrition, or a complete, you know, certification in it. But if you want the information, you should be able to find it easily. You should also then be able to talk to your veterinarian and share the information. But,
right.
You know, I called, what was it, 28 companies and asked for their essential amino acid profile as well as their digestibility. One of them gave me digestibility and they also gave me their amino acid, which that was Primal. So they did that. The other 27 gave me some crazy, crazy answers. You don't believe in digestibility studies. It's harmful to the animal. It's like, wait a second. Yeah. All you do is you measure the food, you feed it, and then you measure what comes out. Like, how is that harmful to the animal?
You collect the poop. You collect the poop? Is that how you measure it?
Yeah, and you analyze it. So, you know, you sit there and you say, you analyze the food for all the everything that's supposed to be there, and you weigh it out. You feed it to the dog. Then you weigh how much of the food is left, if any. And then you measure the fecal matter. And there's a formula, like some labs and centers can actually, like, collect the urine and stuff like that. But you measure what they put out and then you do the analysis, and then you could go even further. And when there's digestibility and there's bioavailability. So digestibility will tell you, I fed you 10 pounds and I only got 0.7 pounds that came out. So that's my digestibility. The bioavailability says, when I gave you the food, I analyzed it and I knew that there was 4.4 grams of leucine in it. And now when I measured the fecal matter and I collected all that, I saw that, you know, 0.4 came out. So then that tells me the bioavailability.
Got it.
there's lots of ways to streamline it so that people can have a better understanding of it without having to get into all the nitty gritty. And the industry is loath to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like I kind of understand it in the way where if someone is doing weightlifting or they're counting calories, like they need to have their they set their macros, you know, they want protein at 30 something percent, they set their fat and they kind of start with that and then they alter it based on what they want to do. Do they want to put on muscle? Do they want to lose fat? Like all these things. And I think this is something that should be applied to dogs as well, because, you know, we want them. There are different dogs and they have different like issues with weight. Do they want to lose weight? Do they want to gain weight? And these macros will definitely help them to assess that.
Yeah, and right now there is no requirement. And as a matter of fact, the regulatory bodies, AFCO being one, they are opposed to putting that on the label, which we put on all of our food and treats. It's a little pie chart. So, you know, we're just like, we put it out there, everyone should. And again, it's kind of like telling a complex idea to a kid. You can say all the details to it and they'll take what they can handle and what they can understand and they'll internalize it. It doesn't mean then you walk away. It means you ask follow-up questions and make sure that you keep getting to the point where they understand it. You know, another thing that the industry does that gets away from the understanding is you can look at a label on an extruded kibble and you might see things on there like, oh, apples and broccoli and things like that. Well, depends on where they put those in. If you put broccoli and spinach before the extrusion process as part of the whole mix,
you take out all the nutrients.
There's nothing left. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
So then it's like, well, are you putting that on as a palatant? Are you putting it as a coating at the end? What are you doing with that food? And how much of that is the dog getting? I mean, it's if pet food manufacturers didn't put palatants and coatings on top of the kibble, I don't think any dogs would eat the kibble.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard, wow. It's a round, brown ball of kibble. It's not going to eat it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we do that when we cook too, for those listeners that listen to us that are cooking their own fresh food. We wait until the very end to add the vegetables. You simply blanch them. We cook in week increments. We haven't even really frozen lately just because we've been at home. But if you cook the vegetables first, you're cooking out all the nutrients. Obviously, our dogs are not super excited to eat leaves of lettuce. So we grind them up and we blanch them and we add them too, but for the same reason. And when we started doing that, when we learned about it, it was kind of like, well, how are you getting nutrients from freeze-dried carrots then? Because that seems like it would defeat the purpose. So that same logic is employed just with a different type of food. So it's crazy.
Yeah. So with, like, when we started and said we wanted to do pets before profits, the next thought was, we said, okay, we have the guidelines for what a dog needs and what a cat needs. And then we went back and said, well, how's the best way to get there? And if you wanted to be all natural without synthetics and artificials, it's very difficult to do that in kibble because of the extrusion process.
Yeah.
So we immediately threw away kibble and we said, we're not going to do that. Not that there's anything wrong with kibble. It serves a purpose. It's a good cost. It's shelf stable. It does a lot of good things.
Yeah.
But we said, for us, that's not how we're going to get to a better place. And then we looked at dehydrated and we looked at all these other things and we settled on freeze dried because basically freeze dry is raw. It's exactly what you're making in your kitchen. I mean, we take the raw materials, we put it in, we mix it, we do different things like that. We put it into a mold, you know, to get the shape of the bar. And then it goes into an instant quick freeze. So not even the freezer that takes hours for it to go. I mean, it goes through a spiral column and it is frozen solid very quickly. And the reason for that is we don't want any cellular damage done to the food or the ingredients or the product. And then it comes out and then it goes into a sublimation chamber, which is where the freeze drying occurs. It's a whole weird sort of thing. We have it on our website, but there's a tri point you want to hit. So it goes immediately from a solid state to a gas. It never goes to a liquid. So you measure, you change the atmospheric pressure inside the chamber and you change the temperature, and it's a cool looking little chart.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
But what it does is it then takes everything, like, so when you've frozen that food, our bars are 2 ounces, but it goes into the chamber weighing somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 7.5 ounces. And then it goes in, it hits that sublimation point, everything goes to gas, and the bar looks, it's the same size, the same shape, the same smell, the same textures. It just doesn't have any moisture to it, or very little moisture to it. And then through that, we have a kill step, which gets rid of any pathogens, or the vast majority of pathogens. We get to a log 5 reduction, which is another science nerdy sort of thing. Human food and everything else just has to be at log 3. We get to a log 5, so there's even fewer pathogens that are around. So people can pick the food up and not worry about E. coli or Salmonella or any other thing like that. And then, you know, being able to do that, it keeps all the nutrients in place, which is the first and foremost what the industry has to teach people. It's not about an ingredient. As much as, you know, I like the idea of fresh food from companies like Just Food for Dogs and The Farmer's Dog and all those other guys, it's not about a russet potato or a USDA beef. USDA is a designator by how much fat is on the meat. And if it's marbleized and things like that, it has nothing to do with it. It's like, oh, great, it's human grade. Well, there's some kind of crappy human grade too, like from a nutrient standpoint. It's instead of spending the time and the energy on that, tell everybody what nutrients are there. Tell everyone what the amino acids are. And if you did that, then everyone could kind of like put the shoulders down, take a deep breath and be like, all right, now I feel good about what I'm feeding, instead of the belief of the marketing spin.
Yeah. So for our other listeners that are either still bound to kibble, be it for financial reasons, for they're just not ready to put in the time and effort into researching it, what are some things that our listeners can do when they're picking out a kibble? I know there's so many options. Are there key indicators to look for? I don't know if I want to necessarily name brands, just because it is going to differ for every dog. Is it something that people should consult with their vet for? I know, like Jen had mentioned, there's grain-free, there's with grain. How can someone who's just kind of entering this dog nutrition sphere start out on the right foot?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's probably the one that's, you know, asked after, are you going to tell me yours is the best? And then it's like, well, then what should I feed? and it's important to look at what your dog needs. So like the first and foremost, the question has to be, because dogs are all over the place, is it a rescue dog? Is it a dog that is burning a lot of calories? Is it a dog, you know, what's their environment? What are they doing? Are they going, like my Springer Spaniel got down to 38 pounds at the beginning of the pandemic because myself, my wife, my daughter, like all took him on a 2-mile walk each day. So he was ended up like 8 to 10 miles a day.
Oh my gosh.
He's burning a lot of calories.
Yeah.
So those are the things, like you got to ask that first question of what does the dog need? And that'll come to from a calorie standpoint. If they have certain sensitivities or an allergy, you know, very few dogs actually have an allergy to a food. It's about 1% that have a true allergy. A lot more have sensitivities, but you need to know those things. And that'll help guide you to a food choice. Then after that part, it switches the focus back on you as the owner. I mean, truly, how much can you spend? And it doesn't mean that spending more is better for your dog, but it is a place to start with, to start looking at options. Then you got to look at the convenience factor. I mean, if you're whatever, fifth floor of a building that does not have an elevator, do you really want to start carting a 30-pound bag up and down the stairs every time? Or if you're constantly traveling, you might not want to be a raw feeder.
Yeah.
Because if your dog's constantly in the car, then you got to have a cooler filled with, you know, raw meat and organs. Yeah. Don't get pulled over.
Right.
So those questions come back to you as the owner. And once you have all that stuff in, then you could start narrowing it down to like the last choice that I say to people is, where do you like to shop?
Yeah.
Are you someone that wants to do all your shopping in one spot? Like I like to go to the grocery store you know, I'm going to go to Albertsons or Safeway, so I don't want to make a special trip. Well, if that's the case, then you can look at foods that Albertsons or Safeway carry. Or you say, you know, I'd rather buy online. Yeah. You know, so each decision point that you make changes the universe of foods that are available. And then once you get down to those things, like does my, you know, my dog can't or shouldn't eat chicken. I like to shop online. I can spend whatever, $2 a day on my dog. So you have all those things. Then you look at the ingredient or the pet food companies that fit that kind of series of questions. And then you start asking the manufacturer questions. You know, you can look at how many calories are in there. And it's important because a calorie, it's not always the same. Like when you look at it, on one food, you might have to feed 2 cups of food. On another one, it'll say 2 cups of food, and you think it's the same, but it's not. It depends on the size of the food, the density, yeah, all those other things. So one of the other things that would help in the industry is if they turned it to grams or mm-hmm. you know,
by ounces weight
per feed. Yeah.
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. if you knew that, plus the feeding guidelines are just suggestions to start with, and they're so bizarre. Well, yeah, your dog is 27 pounds, so you should feed between 1 3/4 and 3 cups. It's like,
yeah.
Okay. I have seen that.
Is this a cup?
so. Right. And sometimes when the kibbles are larger, then there's less weight in a cup versus like a kibble that's smaller and has less air around it. So it's really different. And I just use like one of my own cups, and I know that I use this for dog food all the time, so I just go off of my cup, not the industry, I guess, cup. Yeah. And you know, I just like adjust from there,
which it's kind of interesting because if you look at like the measuring cups, and some pet food companies have been huge advocates of giving away measuring cups, but 9 times out of 10, if this is the cup, the 2 cup level is here.
Mm-hmm. It's not at the top.
There's right. still this much there. So what ends up happening is, I mean, I've seen people with a beer pitcher scooping in and dumping food out for their dog. But even on a small thing like that, if you're putting that much more food to level off the cup rather than where the measurement is, your dog is going to get anywhere from 12 to 15% more calories per day.
Yeah.
Feeding. And I mean, spread out over yeah. 365 days, and all of a sudden it's just like, wait a second, how come Fido's fat today? You know, like, when did that happen?
It's for anybody who's ever calorie counted, you know, you gotta weigh your food, because you say like a spoonful of peanut butter and that's, you know, 70 calories or something. I have some pretty big spoons, right? And right. you can't really, you know, go off of like a spoonful. It needs to be a weight, because otherwise you just don't know how much you're getting. And like an extra spoonful, you know, 20% of a spoon every single day, you get a lot more calories than you think. So yeah,
a perfect example on that, the spoonfuls and the measurements, when we talk to people about like the feeding, we tell them to look at a cost per feeding or cost per day feeding. So what's important there is you look at your dog's weight, you look at the kcal requirement, and then you figure out based on grams how many that they should get. Then you take that and you figure out how many grams are in the bag, and then you get number of days feeding, and then you divide that by the cost of it. And then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, you know, it said that it was only $33.99 compared to yours at $42.99, so I thought they were less expensive, but I have to feed more of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So on a per day basis, yours is $3.50 and theirs is $8. Like that's another game that we play, because the bags are the same size. No one's going to, you know, like it's the bag of potato chips. It's this big, but there's only like this much potato chip in there. So you need to do that. We also talk about trying to do the measurements on the proteins once you get the essential amino acids or the fat. Like, so on our product, for example, everyone jumps up and says, oh, I'm nervous because you say 34% crude fat. And my dog, I can't give that. My vet says that's too high fat. Well, the way you do the math on it is our bar is 57 grams. So you take 57 grams of food, multiply it by 34, and you get about 17 grams of fat in that bar, which you don't know. You're just thinking, well, it's 34%, so that's got to be a high number. Yeah. You can take, won't say the name of the brand, but you can take a veterinary diet for GI, which, you know, has problems with fat. You take their low-fat GI, and when you look at it, you'll find out that you have to feed 190 grams of their food at 17% crude fat. Well, if you do the math, 190 times 17%, it's actually higher than ours. So on the low fat veterinary diet, you're getting more fat on a daily basis than you are on the 34% incredibly fat bar. So it's like, there's those sorts of things that if we just forced us, all of us in the industry, to be more transparent, we could help out so much more, and people would have better questions, and it would force us as manufacturers to be better at what we do.
Yeah. So, and I think
that's a long way to answer your question. I'm sorry.
No, it's helpful though.
And I just think as consumers, like, this is what we should demand of these companies, because without our demands, they would not change their practice. You know, why would they change? If it's working for them, they're making a lot of money. They can make outlandish claims and people would buy them. So this is just something that we have to vote with our dollars, I guess, you know, really, really spend our money on the companies that really care about your dogs and care about educating.
Ask the question. So to run the digestibility and get the amino acid profile, it costs about $3,000. Now, for me personally, I don't want to spend $3,000 to find out what I'm feeding my dog. But as a company, $3,000 is an easy investment to make to know what I'm doing. So think about these companies that are doing $50, $100, $1 billion. If they're not sharing their digestibility and essential amino acid profile, you have to ask why. It's not that they don't have the money to run it. So the other option, not that everything is an either or false dichotomy, but the other potential option is that they just don't like the results.
Yeah.
So what we say is, like, demand it. We, our sheet, we tell people, take this to the veterinarian, print it off of our website, it's there, and then call up whoever you feed and ask them for the same data.
Yeah.
And I should be able to provide it.
Yeah, I think questioning is always the most important thing. And the same thing goes with veterinary nutritionists too. And veterinarians, when you're looking to make a significant change in your dog's diet, with my first dog, I don't want to say conned, but it was suggested that I had a certain brand, but it was a brand that the veterinary office bought into. And then there's that conflict. So it's always wise. A vet visit is what, $45 usually? If you have insurance, it's cheaper. Talk to a couple different vets, do your research. And like you had mentioned in the beginning, every dog food is not going to be appropriate for every specific type of dog too. You have to take a lot of things into consideration. And once you're ready to go down that path, you have to start with, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of research and second opinions and going to experts and listening to podcasts. I'm sure there are others outside of Dog Mom Podcast too that do it, because it's what your dog is ingesting. It's got to be an important conversation.
Yeah. And it's all the great things and awful things about the internet and information available everywhere. It is easier now than ever before to have confirmation bias. Yeah. So I think this is awful. I'm going to look up how awful it is, and I'm going to see a million things that tell me how awful it is. What's important, though, is to ask the other questions. You know, if I keep telling you this, and you never ask the other ones, or my only request for you is to ask this one question, you got to wonder why I'm doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, a quick example, there's a pet food company that talks about probiotics in their food, and big letters like this on the back of the bag, it says 10 million CFU or colony forming units of probiotics per pound. So the common layperson would sit there and go, wow, 10 million, that seems like a lot. Well, scientific research has shown that to make a claim of assisting in gut health, you need 500 million servings or 500 million CFUs per serving or per day. And if you really want to promote it where you can show that there's efficacy, it has to be a billion. So unless that dog is going to eat 10 pounds of food a day, they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing. So like whenever you see someone that puts out a claim that says, we don't use whatever, New Zealand lamb. Well, what's wrong with New Zealand lamb? Like, don't just take the implication that something's wrong or that it's better that they're using something else. Yeah. Ask the questions. You know, Ryan and I go around the country and we talk to people and retailers and do different things. Ryan's on a speaking tour. He's got more letters after his name than I do in my name. And the good thing is we can go an entire conversation and never talk about our food. Like we'll do a lot of these talks and we'll just say, here's the nutrition. Here's what your dog needs. Here's what companies do to hide it. I mean, I've spent 25 years, Ryan spent 22 years in pet food.
Yeah.
We know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we jokingly say that when we founded the company, it was because we looked in the mirror and said, yeah, we probably did some of these things that we shouldn't have. So making amends for it and trying to educate people and drive to what's better for a pet. You know, it's too important. I mean, to the fact I love golden retrievers. I've got another one now. The fact that most golden retrievers, 90% of golden retrievers over the age of 10 will die from cancer. Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Those are sorts of things that.
I think that hits both Ashley and I because both of ours died from at different ages. But yeah, it's rough. And I wish they're great dogs. I wish they would live 15, 16 years.
Every single one of my goldens died at, well, I had one that lived to 12 and a half. The other two died shortly after they turned 10. And, you know, whether it's the high carbs, you know, there's a line of thought that believes high carbs feed cancer cells, whereas fat and protein power the healthier cells, kind of like a keto sort of diet. There's another belief that in kibble, there's a thing called the Maillard reaction, which creates these things called AGEs, which are cancerous. There's a belief that there could be a cumulative effect on that that leads to it. It's like I said, it's too important just to stick with the status quo. You know, it's time to snap the landscape. As consumers, it's time to ask the questions. And just sit there and say, like, if I am giving you my money, more importantly, I'm giving you the health and trust for my pet.
Yeah.
Don't disappoint me.
Right.
You know, and that's the most powerful thing we can do. And it's like, if you ask the questions and they don't give you an answer or they dance around it, that's usually the first thing that you sit there and go, well, I think I'm going to find someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so important. I think when I was, I got my first golden when I was 13, so I didn't really understand too much about the industry. And the only time that I realized how much of an impact a food can have on your dog is I was feeding my dog, Bill Jack, and he had seizures every month. And immediately when I took him off that food, he never had a seizure ever again. So like, that's insane to me. You know, I'm sure he had, and I'm sure a lot of dogs eat that food and are totally fine and they live a long, happy life. But it's just finding the right food for your dog, right? Obviously, my dog was having a severe reaction to the food, and it just shows how important it is as, you know, dog owners to really, you know, do your research. But I want to go back to Noble Bars because I want to talk about the bars. Even if you don't want to. The first time I got the bars, I was just so surprised at how little they have to eat. So my dog is 70, my golden 75 pounds, and she would only get 3 bars a day. And so 6 ounces.
I think that's a bar.
That's
2 ounces.
Yeah.
It feeds 25 pounds of dog weight, breaks off into 5 pieces. So each piece that breaks off is 5 pounds. So it's easier to feed, more, you know, more portion controlled. We just, again, it's not about the ingredients. It's about the nutrients and the essential amino acids that you can deliver. And there's a couple things that always happen. We tell people, and they see the bar and they're just like, yeah, that's a treat, right? It's like, no, it's a complete and balanced food. Yeah, my dog's not gonna be happy with that. Like, okay. Like, I mean, we hear it all the time from everyone. And they also tell us, you know, I don't believe you about the higher digestibility, less stool volume. And every single time they come back to us and they're just like, that's crazy. My dog was actually happy and content with exactly what you said. You know, some people have to make slight adjustments up or down. They're like, day four, there was less poop. And they're just like, it was so easy. So like, Ashley, I'm sure, and I've got nothing against fresh food. I think that's a fantastic option. But if you're pressed for time, I would imagine that your prep time, you know, we've heard from people that if they put it on a daily basis, it's 15 to 30 minutes to do the prep. Most people will do it a week at a time so yeah. that they kind of get it out of the way. And, you know, like that's fantastic. For us, we just think if you're going to go travel, you either got to keep it refrigerated, freeze it, thaw it when you go out or stuff like that. Or we're just like, grab a bar.
Yeah.
You know, grab a couple of bars and go. Like it's just, it's meant to be convenient for the pet parent as well.
Yeah. The convenience factor is definitely not there with fresh feeding.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun if you like cooking and you kind of get to do those things. But, you know, if you don't have the time, or even if you do have the time, but you wanted to do something else, like, you know, it's not necessarily convenient to go hiking through the mountains when you're not getting snow and like break out a nice little picnic for your dog, as opposed to just kind of walk in, reach him in the back and here you go and keep moving.
One, I mean, there's something to be said too for not handling meat. We're vegetarian. So so cooking raw chicken and chicken livers is a little bit disgusting. So yeah, the convenience factor is definitely there.
And he has vegan bars too.
Is that okay for dogs? Because I've specifically made sure that I do not put my emotional beliefs onto my dog.
Yeah, so we've been working on this diet for almost a year now. Mm-hmm. And what we did was, again, if you go with the idea of pets before profits and pets first, there's a lot of people, there's been a tremendous uptick of people feeding vegan for their dogs. And if you ever want to polarize a group or a room of dog lovers, say that you're going to feed your dog a vegan diet, and it's, you know, it's insane.
I mean, even me as a vegetarian is like, there is no way you can convince me that is healthy.
Yeah. So here's the thing again, if you go away from the idea of ingredients and you go to nutrients, okay, you can deliver everything that a dog needs without meat or without bone. Now, even though our two meat diets are all natural and have the meat in it, the vegan recipe, in order to achieve that, it does have artificial and synthetics.
Yeah.
Because you can't get certain things, you know, like calcium, phosphorus, you can't get that because you get it from a bone or different parts of animal. You can't get that, you know, you're not going to get the calcium you need out of the green bean.
Well, it's just like the Impossible Meat and the Beyond Meat that we eat. There are certain ingredients that have to be synthetic in order to get the nutrients that we would normally get from a meat.
Yeah.
A regular meat.
So we looked at the other brands that are out there, the leaders in the category, and we actually, the $3,000 testing that I told you for the amino acids and the digestibility, we actually paid to get their product tested. And we looked at the results and we said, this is bad. I mean, not like it's going to hurt the dog, but it's not what they say it's going to be, because most companies in the industry will formulate on computer to hit a number, but then they never do it again. So they don't know if the production process has brought it down. They don't know if the digestibility is there for the dog to get all that stuff. So we actually ran that and we said, look, it's not about jumping on a trend. It's saying if people are going to feed vegan, let's make sure that we make a better vegan food for a dog. Yeah. So part of that too, like the other thing that's on our website is we have a little sheet like this that shows all the ingredients and why we use them and where we source them from. So you can see up here, there's some of the artificial or synthetic ones, and we say the country of origin and why we use that one as opposed to a natural version. And once we did that, we actually got a little more bold with it because we saw the results. So we actually tested our diet against 12 meat-based kibbles. And you know where it's gonna go. I wouldn't say it if it didn't, but we kicked their ass. So, I mean, that's kind of like the little motto that we've got is we've kicked the crap out of kibble. You know, and that was the case. So one of the things that people said was like, no, dogs don't need that. And we said, all right, well, do you know that of 6,000 dog brands that are out there, 1,800 of them use L-carnitine just like we do in our vegan diet, but they're meat-based. Why?
Yeah.
Like, so if we're using it because we can't get it from a plant source, they're using meat. Why are they adding it?
Yeah. That's interesting.
So, those are the sort of questions to ask. And like I said, our vegan diet, today's the 16th, it actually goes into production on the 21st.
Nice.
And then it'll be available through the website and through independent retailers come January 1st. And we're excited about it. It's also good for dogs that do have an allergy, So like if you look at the veterinary diets for allergy, it's either a soy-based or a hydrolyzed vegetable sort of thing like that. So it serves two purposes. One, we don't think you should have to have an ailment or an illness to have to go get a special food. We think if you feed properly, you won't have those illnesses and ailments. So again, that's why we created vegan. But man, when we announced that we were doing that, there was some hate mail that came.
I'm sure.
Yeah, you sent me some the vegan treats, and my dogs love them. So I didn't think so, but then my little one, she loves to eat fresh fruits and veggies. She eats everything, so she gobbled it up. But I didn't think my older dog Kramer would like it, and he was like he loved them. So it's carnivore approved because my Kramer is very picky.
My two dogs, one loves the green beans and the carrots, but hates the sweet potato. And the other one loves the sweet potato and carrots. So it's like they'll split the food. Like it's like kids on Halloween night. They'll split the food and then there's a fight for the carrots.
I love it. Yeah. Bjorn loves sweet potato, loves carrots. I bake them. I bake his treats because it's easier. I feel like anytime there's a dried sweet potato, anything, it's quadruple the cost of what it would cost me to just put it in my oven for a couple of hours.
Yeah, no, and that's the trade-off. The only thing that we tell people on homemade food is just to make sure that whether you buy a formula or something along those lines, is just to make sure that you have the right vitamins, minerals, and nutrients going into it.
Yeah.
Just because a dog, just like what was the show, the document, Super Size Me. You could eat McDonald's for, a long time before you see any health concerns. And not that making homemade food is going to cause a health concern, but you just want to make sure that you're not missing something that's needed.
Yeah.
I follow a lot of groups on Facebook and social media, and I try to just be an observer. But every now and then someone will come up with something like, well, if you give your dog cayenne pepper, jalapenos, and lemon juice, you'll cure cancer, and you're like,
and you'll ruin their digestive tract in the process. But sure.
So, but those are the things. Just to make sure that you do that, and there's a bunch of companies that actually offer same thing that manufacturers do. There's companies that make smaller premixes, just to make sure that you're getting all the vitamins and minerals that are needed. So, but it's occasionally we have to do that. With our dogs, and it's kind of like, oof.
It's a process, that is for sure.
Yeah, usually when I'm doing it, I'm looking at the dogs going, I really don't like you this much. Why am I doing this?
I ask myself why I do it every single week.
Yeah, but then you get to give it to them and you see them jumping around and you see the wiggles coming around and you're just like, yeah, all right, that's it.
Yeah, it's all worth it.
They're worth it, I suppose.
And you can find Noble Food Bars on their website, which is Noble. You tell me, Jim.
NOBLfoods.com. You can go there. And I believe we have the discount code for listeners.
Yes, yes. They gave me a coupon code. It's Kramer and Birdie. I will list it in the show notes, so you can go find it there. And I have to tell you, I actually thought that it was Noble, as in like Noble. But then I looked at your, you gave me a shirt and stuff, and I was like, oh, it's no bull, as in bull bleep.
It's all. It's right? It's Noble, as in no BS. It's Noble, as in like regal and for a cause, which is the health of our pets. And then the last one, which people don't really get, is it's no bull. There's no bull required. You just feed from your hand. And if you look at the logo,
I
love it.
I mean, that's the bar.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's really clever.
Got so, yeah, that's, okay. You know, usually back of a cocktail napkin thinking.
Yeah, it was like 2 months in. I was like, oh, no bull, as in, you know, I'm like, oh, okay. So I was like hoping that was not, I've been saying it wrong. I've been saying it noble, but it's no, you know, I guess you could say it both ways.
Anyway.
Either one works. The thing, side story on it, the clincher when we were going through, because originally the product was called More Bars. And it was M with a paw print, R-E. And it stood for meals ready to eat with the paw print. Because we had that, and like the first people that we were talking to about it were police. And they were just like, oh, so this is an MRE, like the military. And we were like, oh yeah. And I was tapping my pencil and it looked like a paw print. I was like, oh, I'm a genius. Yeah, so we did that. And then, you know, we were switching the names and trying to find things that were more in tune to the brand and who we were and what we wanted to do. And Noble was up there, and I watched, it's cheesy, I'll admit to it, but I watched the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie this one night, 6-7 months or 10 months ago now. And there was a line in it where Maid Marian looks at him and says, oh, is this the Robin Hood, or is this the Robin that, you know, was a petty little boy and would always run to his father and riches and all that stuff. And he said, you know, in the war, I've seen princes soil themselves and run away at the beginning of battle. And I've also seen squires will pull a spear from their side to defend their fallen horse. And then he says, nobility is not a birthright. It's a course of action. And, you know, I called up Ryan, our co-founder, and I was just like, Ryan, this is what I heard in the movie. And he goes, I had a dream last night that Noble was. I was like, all right, we're
all right. That's done. It. That's a sign.
So yeah, we went with, and it's always like, you know, those are the fun parts of the business, is to come up with, like, you'll pass by something, you'll be like, oh, all right, go buy it. But it's like, no, actually that took like 2 months of us going back and forth with the marketing company and lots of research and strange dreams and movie choices.
That's a great story.
Glad we didn't watch The Fifth Element or something stupid like that. But yeah, I mean, so the other part that I'll tell your listeners on it, you can use the code. All of our product is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you try it, you don't see the stuff that I've said, if you don't see the eagerness to eat, if you don't see the energy, if you don't see the reduction in stool volume, or you don't see the palatability, just send us an email and we'll refund your money. There's no questions asked. You know, it's just, we believe in the product. We believe it's palatable and does all the things we say. So if it doesn't, we're more than happy to give you a refund. So.
And do you sell to any stores? Do any pet stores or other stores carry your product that they can, you know, go in store?
We just sell to independent pet food stores. We also sell to some like training facilities and groomers and things like that. I think right now we're available in Canada and the US. We're in fairly new, so we're in about roughly 100 stores in Eastern Canada, and about 250 in the US. It's kind of spread out. We don't have a whole lot of in-place distributors, so we're growing, we're picking that up. But on our website, there is a store locator. So you can always go in, punch in your zip code, and see if there's any stores close to you. If not, you can order it off directly online and use the coupon code that we gave you, and people can get that shipped directly to their home. So
yeah, and I've ordered online, and you ship out pretty fast, within a few days. So yeah.
Longest is the transit time to you. I get it done pretty much same day I see the order.
yeah. It's all about the processing time that, you know, we have control over. So
yes.
So and Ashley, when can I send you some? Not to switch out completely, but just, you know, for a convenient when you take the dog to the cafe or for a hike or something.
You can send me whatever you want to send me. I will give.
She won't say no.
I will give an honest review though, and I feel like I feel both of my dogs are pretty easy to please. Honestly, they'll eat anything. Bjorn, I've had since he was a puppy, and I think he trusts me. And then we just rescued Tova, and she's a special needs rescue, and she's just grateful for food. So it'll probably be met with rave reviews.
Well, then we'll have to focus in on if you find it convenient and if it does what we said it would.
Right.
We'll see. I'll be the guinea pig.
Outstanding. We'll get some to you.
All right. And then if you guys want to boop that follow button, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Dog Mom Podcast, or check us out on our website, www.zippypaws.com/dogmompodcast. Thank you so much again for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was great.
Thank you so much.
I learned so much. The pet food industry is just such a big cluster of information.
It's massive.
Just,
yeah.
Right. And it's nice to just get an insider opinion, and you know, all your knowledge, 20 something years of knowledge in the pet food industry.
It's crazy. It's impressive. It's a $100 billion industry. So there's lots of people with a specific interest in doing what they've been doing.
I feel like that's what I spend on my own per year. So that's not that surprising.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
See you guys next week.
See ya. Bye-bye. Thank you.